Hi, and welcome back to the Mob Mentality Show. And today is a special episode because it's a crossover with the Agile Embedded podcast. I'd like to introduce Jeff Gable and Luca Ingiani. We will jump into a couple topics, pain points in embedded systems and an intro to mobbing. But first, you know, Jeff and Luca and Austin, would you all introduce yourselves?
Sure, I'll go first. So my name is Jeff Gable. I'm an embedded systems consultant focused on the medical device industry. And Luca and I have been doing the Agile Embedded podcast for, gosh, coming up on 3 years.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. And wow. It's a pleasure to be here. It's nice to meet you, Chris and Austin.
Yeah, so maybe I'll go next. So my name is Luca Ingiani. I'm across the pond in Germany. I'm also an Agile consultant. Started out as a mechanical engineer, just like Jeff, then went over to the dark side. I'm still happily trying to merge both the hardware world and the software world, and trying to help people who struggle with that.
Nice. Yeah, and my name is Austin Chadwick. I've been in software engineering for about 15 years. Started out pretty traditional waterfall, then was kind of like at a from scratch Scrum experimentation, and then for the past 6 years, been doing full time mob programming, and it's been pretty awesome. The interesting side note is almost my full career has been involved with not only pure software, but software that interacts with firmware and hardware and the whole thing. And so while I am not an embedded engineer, don't have a lot of experience there, I've worked with embedded people quite a bit. So how about you, Chris?
So I'm Chris Lucian. I worked in kind of a mob programming environment since 2011 right now. So that's been quite a few years now, 13 years close to as of this recording. And, love all the extreme programming related things and collaboration and all that. So.
Nice. So, Jeff and Luca, what are some specific pain points and practices in the embedded systems industry? I'm really curious on this one.
Sure. I'll maybe get started and Luca will jump in. Sorry, my mic is just got bumped here. Make sure that's back. Sound okay?
Great.
So I think one of the main thesis of the Agile Embedded podcast is there aren't as many differences as one might think. The classic difference is just we write code that interacts directly with hardware and in a not so great practice is closely tied and coupled to the hardware. And some of that coupling is inevitable, but there are certainly techniques you can do to minimize it. And if you can, you know, run unit tests on your hosts, and if you can run your embedded code in a simulator on your PC, that's a pretty good indicator that you've successfully decoupled it from the hardware. But I would say in general, the embedded systems industry is behind in terms of adopting more modern software development techniques. And I personally have never mob programmed. I've done a little pair programming here and there and enjoyed it when I did it, but apparently not enough to make it full time. I'm a solo consultant and I like it that way. So I typically work just by myself. So I now don't have the opportunity to pair program or mob program. So I really wish I did. And I think the listeners of our podcast, most of them are probably working in startups or in teams in larger organizations and might have the opportunity to try this out. So looking forward to hearing more about that from you guys, but mainly the embedded systems, code that is tied to the hardware is the classic problem. I think pretty much the industry is getting to the point where they're able to break that coupling and be able to write and test and debug code, not necessarily just with the device on their desk. Luca, other thoughts?
Yeah, well, I guess one argument that needs to be made is that, yes, the embedded systems industry is behind just like all the other industries.
Ha!
I think that's a dirty secret. You know, despite the fact that the Agile Manifesto is now, what, 23 years old or something like that, people still struggle with it more than they really need to, I think. And now that maybe the Agile, that the embedded systems industry as a whole is sort of catching up, I think they will actually start to enjoy mob programming a lot more, because like if you mob out a part of your system together with your electronics engineer and maybe your mechanical engineer, I think that the gains you can make are even greater than in other industries or other types of products, I would imagine.
Yeah, I think that, you know, kind of regarding the adoption of Agile, I think, you know, 2020 pandemic hits, and then, you know, 2021 and 2022, there's like a huge kind of, microchip crisis. And like, you know, there's all kinds of supply chain issues. And I personally have heard many more firmware engineers interested in these topics lately, because you used to be able to rely on a certain chipset or a certain set of hardware, and that became completely unpredictable as a result of the pandemic. And so I think it's interesting because I've heard more firmware engineers say the words decoupling and refactoring than I ever have working in the hardware space. And so it's actually kind of a really interesting time, because I think it's like a new renaissance, like a renaissance or a rejuvenation of this thought process of saying, hey, we might need to order a different chip, and we need to quickly have our business logic working on that chip. And so, you know, I've witnessed those conversations personally in our work, but also just I've been hearing more stories about that too. So I don't know if that has increased that or what you guys have experienced there, but I'm very curious about your experiences regarding that.
Yeah, I think that's certainly true, but also I think embedded systems products are being dragged kicking and screaming into the modern age, where you can't just have like a single release per year anymore. And yes, it's true, releasing means something different if at some point, you know, a truck comes and picks up your product and just drives it away, and then it's gone. Like that was your chance to deploy, right? So yes, things may work a little different, but nonetheless, I think a lot of people are understanding that, you know, we need to shorten our cycle times. We need to be more nimble. We need to work together more, even without a supply chain crisis.
Nice. Yeah, and I guess maybe one follow-up question. I won't delay us getting into mob programming too much longer, but I am curious. So what are your guys' typical go-tos for helping embedded teams have shorter cycle times? Yeah.
So I'll speak for myself first. Maybe in the medical device industry, the limiting factor there is often more the safety critical processes and documentation rather than the hardware. I'll say that, you know, I was obviously very aware of the chip shortage and of the trend in the industry to be exactly like you said, Chris, where people were having to change processors. Just by luck, that didn't happen to affect the projects I was on. So I didn't have to respond to that particular issue, but that was absolutely by luck. In medical devices, it is usually that you have requirements of various levels, like system requirements, and the software requirements have to trace back to those. You have to verify that all of your software requirements were met with test protocols. And so there's this huge thing called a trace matrix, where you essentially make sure that all of these things trace to each other, that if you look at a test protocol, what requirements is it testing? And does it actually do that effectively? And you have to look at a requirement and say, okay, where is this verified? What test protocol? And people would manually trace that in Word or Excel. Sometimes several sheets spread across different things. And so you'd have to go, well, I'm changing this. Now I have to go Control F and search for that requirement number over here. And it was this, it's this very tedious manual process.
And let me just interject to say that that was a terrible idea even 20 years ago.
Right. And so now, nowadays we have, you know, purpose-built tools, software lifecycle management tools. They've been around for a long time, but people are still tracing stuff in Word and Excel, and it just introduces so much more friction into the process. And people actively don't want to make changes because they, quote, don't want to deal with the paperwork. And every time I hear that, my soul dies a little bit, because that should absolutely not be the case. It makes people make, you know, avoid making changes that would improve the quality of the device in the name of this regulation that's supposed to improve quality. And so that's the main issue I see in the medical device industry.
Yeah, I remember seeing that, and you kind of see all the lean implications of that, right? Because if the overhead, you know, paperwork, administrative pain is high, then the batches get bigger, and then the risks get bigger, and, you know, and then, yeah,
it's a vicious circle, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Then that has a whole set of side effects and all that kind of thing. As far as the coupling issue, what do you guys, how do you guys deal with that? When you come into a team or a product, coupling too hard to the hardware.
Luca, you want to take that one?
Sure. I mean, oftentimes people don't quite realize that there could be a different way. You know, it has always been thus that the electrical engineers sit over there, the software engineers sit over there, and the mechanical engineers, you know, they sit in a different building altogether, and we don't really talk to them because they're stupid. And then everybody keeps, as the metaphor goes, throwing products over the, or, you know, code over the wall. The other people, and then, you know, surprise, surprise, it doesn't work. And it's not even because those people are, I don't know, lazy or, you know, actually as unpleasant as I made them sound, but just because they didn't realize that it doesn't have to be this way. And sometimes you really need to sort of push them and say, no, you know, it's fine. You can have an electrical engineer and a software engineer on the same team. And it's actually an excellent idea, because then they can sit together and figure out how to work with, let's say, a sensor. You know, should we filter this electronically? Should we filter this in software? You know, let's just sit down together and hash it out and see what works. And so there's a lot of cargo culted complexity and fear. In many cases, I feel that a lot of my work is really holding hands and saying, no, it's going to be fine. You know, you can talk to the other guy, to the other girl, and it's going to be okay, and your product is going to be fine. And in fact, this is maybe the other thing that I find myself doing a lot, is to really discuss what constitutes your product. Like Jeff said, there's a lot of mandatory documentation in safety critical systems, and you need to understand that this is actually part of your product. It's not like, over here is my product, which, you know, is made of curly brackets, and over there is my documentation. No, it's one and the same thing. If you don't have the appropriate documentation, you will not ship. End of story. And once you change this mindset, which is surprisingly difficult, then you realize, you know, I need to generate documentation, for instance, as part of generating my product, you know, because it is part of my product, that sort of thing. So most of my day is not spent teaching people, I don't know, how to write tests or something. You know, they're smart guys. They can figure it out by themselves. But a lot of it is really mindset change and reassuring people that it's going to be fine, which it is.
Your story reminds me of my first day at a company. I was like, can we go talk to the person that works on the database? And they said, oh, no, we can't talk to them. We have to put a ticket in. And I'm like, but they're sitting right over there. And there was like literally like three cubicles away. They probably heard me talking. And it was no, we need to put a ticket in. And they were mortified when I went over to talk to them. So it was,
did you
it
get
was a
eaten?
Fascinating thing. What was that?
Did you get eaten by the other guy?
Yeah, or? Yeah, exactly. And I never came back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So just kind of leapfrogging off of that, you had asked about techniques to break that coupling with the hardware, and just kind of circling back to that one issue. The simple answer is you write a hardware abstraction layer, just like you would write a database abstraction layer. So if you see Postgres calls littered throughout the main business logic of your web application, you're doing something wrong, because what if you have to switch to MySQL or God help you Oracle or whatever, so you tuck it away behind an abstraction layer. Same thing in embedded systems. Anything with the hardware, you tuck away behind a hardware abstraction layer, and therefore you can implement that, as a simulator on a PC, and then run your application like on your desktop. And it does other things like making sure your code is portable and cross-platform. Like, it kind of automatically forces that. So in classic Agile Embedded podcast style, Luca goes straight for the culture story and I go straight for the technical story. And that's why we work so well as co-hosts, because we both have those different focuses.
Nice, nice. Oh, right on, right on. Good stuff. Well, might be a good time to turn the table on ourselves, and I'll kick it to you, Chris. What's your kind of go-to intro into mob programming?
Oh man. I mean, there's so many, so if I'm talking, with a firmware engineer, right? I think maybe the story is a little bit different. And I think that, so since 2016, we've taken on, software for our IoT products. So that kind of is a backstory. And so before that, since 2011, we were working on internal enterprise software. And in those early days, or I guess before we started working on product development for external hardware devices, there was before everything was just very separate. There was a software team and then a firmware team, and things were the collaboration wasn't great, to say the least. And then switching into that time, we things kind of ramped up, and there was like a lot of just getting to know each other and work with each other. But we had mobs working with the firmware engineers, and they were still in the separate teams. So that's kind of the buildup, right? But in for a short introduction to mobbing, without getting into all of those details, I would say, I like Woody's statement, all the brilliant people working on the same thing at the same time in the same place on the same computer, or remotely distributed on the same computer, but the same place being maybe Zoom or Teams. And to get, further into it, I would say, to somebody more technical, typing's not the bottleneck, it's the problem solving. So this is a method of problem solving together faster. And so, generally speaking, you can be solving the next problem while somebody is typing. And so, it's almost like a pipelining of relevant information into the keyboard as you go, and discovery and things like that. But yeah, how about you, Austin?
Nice, nice. I love it. Yeah. So I was gonna jump to like the two kind of community definitions. You already covered the first one, which is the All Brilliant Minds one. And the one I'd like to highlight too is also coming from Woody, is let's work well together and turn up the good on flow efficiency. And so kind of how Chris talked about, and each of you, Jeff and Luca, talked about the kind of different siloing that can happen with like firmware and electrical engineering and mechanical. Even within software, that same thing happens a lot, like front end, back end, infrastructure, CI/CD, Salesforce, you name it. Like any specialty, you start to build up the walls for whatever reason, and like you said, throwing things over the wall. And what I noticed working not in a non-mobbing style for 10 years is so as what he talked about, turning up the good on flow efficiency. Flow efficiency was a problem, right? Because to get anything done, like a full feature all the way to production, might have to pass through five different silos. And back earlier in the days, I remember the traceability matrices you were talking about there, Jeff and Luca. And And so then you would have another silo, which was like the documentation side and getting people to sign and check off the traceability metrics and all that stuff. And so those queues would build up, and then the batch sizes would get bigger, and then you'd have quality issues. And so the thing I loved about after trying mobbing is you have, if you get the whole system in the room and in the same mob, whether it's a physical room or a remote room, things just start cranking. You know what I mean? You're not waiting for anything because everyone you need is there. And you also start learning everyone else's thing, right? So maybe I started back end, but I'm learning front end, or we invite a firmware engineer in because we need our software needs to interact with that. So he's in the mob, teaching us the ins and outs of how to send the payload correctly. And the documentation says this, but also do this, you know what I mean? Kind of stuff. And so yeah, those are the things that jump out to me. It's just I've become addicted to it because it eliminates those wastes, and it's just so fun to get stuff done, right? You can within hours be releasing to production. And also the hardware abstraction layer you talked about, I've seen the software versions of those go away a lot faster because maybe someone to get a test to pass, they'll like directly couple to the database or something. But then we'll be like, okay, before we're done, someone will jump in and say, let's refactor and create a layer between the two, And so those kinds of things that are easily forgotten tend to happen because there's more eyes, or usually there's someone in the mob who's kind of had the craftsmanship hat, or at least we try to get someone like that in the mob for those kinds of things to happen. So yeah, that's what jumps out to me. Luca and Jeff, you got any follow-up questions? Yeah.
So I'm so jealous because I wish I were in a work situation where I could practice this. So I guess my first question is, how does it typically work? So when you have a more complex product overall, so for our audience, say, we've had, gosh, I'm blanking on his name right now. I think his first name is Matt, but he was essentially the software manager at a scooter company, and so they had firmware on the scooters, they had mobile apps, they had a web backend, so it was a fairly complex IoT and also electromechanical product, and they maybe had 40 to 50 engineers total. So you're obviously not going to mob with 50 people in the same room. Is there like so what's kind of the minimum and the minimum or ideal range, minimum and maximum, and how would you break up a team like that into several smaller mobs but still appropriately sized?
So maybe I can talk a little bit about that, and I'll kick it off to Austin. But I think generally, so just in our department, there's no requirement to mob. What it is, but there is a requirement that at least two sets of eyes review all code. And so, what that means, I think, in practice, is that if you're working solo, then there's a code review, which is very, very rare. If you're in a pair, working in a pair, and then if you're trio or more, you're mobbing. And generally, I think trios and more are both more comfortable and faster than pairing, from my observations. And so you get a lot of benefit. And then as far as the upward bound, it's kind of we also have another kind of idea in the team, which is if you're not learning and you're not contributing, go to a different mob. And so, or start a different work stream. And so what that generally means is that mobs can grow to any size as long as people are learning and contributing. And so, and or contributing. And so, I was in a conference talk where somebody had access to the API to the D-Wave quantum computer. And so we had a room of 20 people very thoroughly engaged in interacting with this API. And I would call that a mob of 20, because, some people knew about quantum, other people knew about Python APIs, other people knew about, the different, theoretical implications and also like NP complete problem space. And so, so to me, that was a thoroughly engaged mob of 20. But generally speaking, I think from a like product budget, we try to hit a minimum of three people working on any one thing. And but we do have teams of at this point 20, that team of 20 can split into five mobs or other, reconfigurations of that 20. And so it goes up and down. So it could be groups of three and you have an additional mob, or groups of five and you have one fewer mob, that sort of thing. And Austin, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, and I just give a concrete story. I just joined a team because we switch teams every so often. Some people switch a lot more often. Some people more on the couple year cycle, year cycle. But I switched to a new team, and to kind of get started, it was a mob of six, because it used to be a mob of three, and then it grew to six. And I think I like Chris's example of like the cell division that can kind of happen naturally with mobs. So we mobbed a couple days with six. And I think some people were comfortable with it, but I was kind of like, you know what? We don't need six people to do the current work item we're doing. You know what I mean? And so I'm like, oh, you know, what do you guys think about splitting off a mob over here? And then, you know, we've basically just did it. And then some people joined me over there. And then, you know, now we had two mobs kind of going. But there are times when we need to make a decision that we'll reform into a larger mob, figure it out, and then, you know, go back. And so it's basically kind of like I said before. Whatever you need to go all the way from ideation to production for your product, so the whole system, right? You know, so if you have a team of 50, you know, maybe you could have, I don't know, 10 subsets of the whole system, right? You know, whatever person can speak for each piece to get all the way through, so there's no waiting, right? But yeah, we, as Chris said, we rely a lot on self-organization. There are some times where Chris will step in with some good shepherding of, you know, a recent move of his was the inverse Conway maneuver to try to help communication flow better, because I think maybe there was over communication and over coupling between teams and things like that. But yeah.
Actually, if you could give a little more detail on that, I'd love to hear it.
Oh yeah. If any, just in short, Conway's Law, right, talks about the idea that your architecture reflects your organizational structure, right? And so if you if everybody's working on a giant monolith, they're probably in the same room. If people are not talking much to each other, then things are tend to be much more decoupled, that sort of thing. An inverse Conway maneuver is to restructure your communication to reflect the architecture you desire. There were a lot of communication costs. This team of 20 that I was referring to has been slowly growing over time, and just the product's doing well, so we reinforced the product with additional resources, that sort of thing. And so standups, for example, were just getting really, really long. And something that I observed while I would join those standups would be, oh, hey, people are listening to stuff that they really just don't care about, or don't need to. But part of it is the coupling. So it kind of boiled down to the pipeline in the end, was the delivery pipeline, was coupling everybody together. So team one ends up affecting team three because maybe there's a break in the build or something like that. I started kind of reading about Conway's Law and the inverse Conway maneuver, and kind of gave a presentation on the communication costs and saying, like, hey, what I'm observing right now is that for 12 people to communicate with each other, everybody has to have 66 edges of understanding between each other. For four people to do that same communication, it's something like six edges. And so it multiplies, with every single person, it multiplies by the number of people that were previously there. And so what we ended up doing is saying, okay, let's create independent delivery pipelines, micro front ends, and let's stop going to the stand-up together. It was kind of ran it as an experiment, but the 45-minute stand-up now is typically less than 3 minutes. And that's between eight people, and then the other teams of four typically end up being shorter or have like really concrete discussions with product owner and potentially firmware engineers when they're on a separate when they're currently actively working on hardware. And it was in my eyes, very largely successful. The amount of time people spend coding, we save potentially multiple hours a week on of development time that can be used for actually working on code in the mobs, and switching to independent delivery on micro front ends and also you know, micro back ends as well, has been relatively fast for the, you know, the investment. So we're if not already there, we're close to basically the trade-off line for making that move.
I'm really curious to hear more about this. I was going to ask about the relationship between architecture and, you know, the communication structures that arise and the mobs that form.
Yes.
And, you know, if I hear mob, what I hear is, you know, groups that form spontaneously. Yeah. But what I'm hearing you say right now is that there is actually sort of a predefined team. Like, you guys work on this. And so by expectation, you are going to form a mob, if any.
Yeah. So maybe I can. Works? Yeah. So just to clarify that one point, and zoom out a bit, there is a certain amount of money that the business wants to invest in a product line. And so everything is budgeted for a headcount around a product, right? And then it's self-organized with the people that you have available to you. And so, you know, this particular product may have, you know, 20 people available to it, but there are different, you know, there are different groups of customers that they can satisfy. And so a good, you know, I think when Bob Martin in Clean Architecture in the book, he talks a lot about the idea of the single responsibility principle not being a single responsibility in solid to the single responsibility is not to a technical component. It is to a end customer of some kind, whatever you're delivering to. And so I kind of joined those two concepts. I was reading that book and I was also reading, you know, looking at the inverse Conway maneuver at the same time. And so the suggestion I had for the team and for this experiment was, let's look at the end customer and let's make a delivery pipeline based on that end customer. And then we did the inverse Conway maneuver that way. And so then those mobs ended up separating and became, you know, more or less completely independent teams, even though they have like some codependencies and they have to jump into each other's mobs to hash things out. They no longer need to be in each other's standups at all. And it saves a ton of time.
Nice. Yeah. It is that blend of there are constraints, but there is also autonomy. And so, for example, you know, I had spent 2 years on one team and then I was like, okay, I'm looking to switch. And so I would just, you know, talk to different mobs and see who's interested in coming to my mob or if there's an opening somewhere else. And then you work it out and do it. And there is always, as Chris likes to say, it's almost like you left the company, but you're still there. So if there was anything that you were contributing to the mob, you left, at least you haven't really left the company. And so they can like bring you in and you can fill in those gaps until they got it on their own. Mm-hmm. That actually happened to me yesterday for an automated test that I left that wasn't very great, but so it was my own fault. But so.
Yeah. And I think what Austin's referring to too is that kind of as the team was growing, there was a point in time where we decided that there were prolonged feelings of like inequity that were occurring within the team, because people that have been on a team longer end up getting there's a focus on that person by the product owner and other people outside the company for that product. And so we put a rule in place, kind of based off of some stuff that I learned from what Google does with switching people around. The main idea is that no one can stay on a product for more than 2 years. And so people, you know, self-organize within that context. So, you know, everything must have at least two people review the code that goes in, and you can't work on the same product for more than 2 years. That way you are chaos engineering your documentation, your communication structure, tribal knowledge, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a great forcing function. This person's about to leave next week by order of this rule. So anything that you know they have in their head needs to get out of their head and into into the document somewhere or spread out among the other people that are currently in the mob. That's great.
Yeah. Much less risky than that person getting hired away. And then it's like, you can't ask questions when they're done.
Right. So again, this is a crossover episode. So your audience will have heard a lot about all of this for many, many, many episodes. Yeah. Our audience may be hearing, we've mentioned mob, I think, once or twice in the past. Yeah. Our audience is hearing about it for the first time. So if members of our audience, say, you know, senior engineers or software managers are intrigued by this concept and want a good, like, here's where I go to get the introductory material so that I can dip my toe into this water, but not completely foul it up so that all my engineers run kicking and screaming, where would you point to them as, like, I don't know if it's one of your episodes or a book that one of you have written or something like that, where this is the canonical introductory resource? What do you think?
Yeah. Austin, do you have one?
Yeah, it's probably too much, but I'll dump it all on the podcast here quickly.
And we'll put it all in the show notes. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll put it on the show notes. Yeah. I'll have some links for kind of like some of our episodes. It's kind of like Mob 101 kind of stuff. So there's video format. There's Woody Zuhl's book. I think it's called Software Teaming Now. There is Mark Pearl's book. There are a few others that I'll link that are great that have kind of do an intro to mobbing, and they do it quite well. Another thing I'd shout out is trying it. So one way to try it is, I'll put a link in the show notes, is there is a group of meetups, and they're in all time zones now, to try mobbing. And so they basically provide, I think on a weekly basis, at least for some of the meetups, a place to go try it in a safe space. You're not working on your production codes, so you're not stressed out, and you know there's people there who have done it before, and they can kind of help guide you through trying out mob programming and pairing in a remote fashion. And so I can link to that. And another way is just trying it at work. I'll link an episode that we had with Alex Bird, and the way he called it was mobbing pickup lines. And so, where you're basically like, you know, let's say it's a firmware engineer and a mechanical engineer, or a software engineer, a firmware engineer. And instead of like, I go write the document and then you go read the document later, it's kind of like, hey, let's work out the API together. And then so you're in the same meeting, and then it's like, hey, can you pull that code up on the screen? Oh, look at line 10. Maybe we should rename that variable. Oh, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden you're pairing or mobbing, right? And right. So just by kind of like inviting for a screen share and then inviting to, you know, kind of edit together safely. And so usually the team I was on for 2 years recently, there was a lot of interaction with other departments that don't pair or mob. And so often we would find ourselves mobbing with them without them not even knowing it by that kind of thing. And so that's a great way to try as well, because it's not like, here's this weird thing you've never heard of, let's try it together, right? Which might scare people, like you're inviting them to a cult. Yeah.
And I'm actually curious. So in those scenarios where you would, you know, kind of mob with people without their knowledge of what they were doing, would they typically come away from that experience saying, yeah, that was cool, or yeah, that was cool, let's do that again, or hey, wait a second, that was inefficient, I don't want to do that again? Of those three possible responses, what did you typically see?
Yes, all of them.
All of them.
Yeah, it depends on the situation. Yeah, some people are like, oh, those weird hippies, I don't know if I ever want to do that again, you know. But sometimes people are like, I love it, how can I do more of this, you know what I mean?
Okay.
And then sometimes it's more in between, where they're, you know, and there may not need to be a mob to mob with them, right? So like sometimes the firmware API is super stable, and so it only takes, you know, a couple mobbing instances. Sometimes our code's in flux and their code's in flux, so it took, you know, several instances over the course of a couple weeks, you know, kind of thing. And they were great to do it. They didn't really talk about it being good or bad, you know, and it just kind of happened. And then
So it's kind of a coalition of the willing thing. And so just in our context, so, you know, we've been mobbing for since 2011, like I said, but all of it was kind of by invitation, and the coalition of the will, like the people that wanted to be there were there, and the people that didn't want to be there weren't there. And then it just slowly grew within the company. And so, you know, now there's people in marketing doing like agile retrospectives, and there's people in sales doing, you know, lean coffees with, and we do lean coffees across different groups of the department. This is all stuff that was unheard of 10 years ago. But just the, you know, as you show successes, it grows, sort of thing. So,
Right.
and then maybe I'll add on to Austin's list one more thing, which is the mob programming RPG. That so you know, Willem Larson and I were talking, and we were saying like we need like some sort of anthropology of like, you know, what are the different roles, you know, because it's not just like the driver and the watcher where somebody watches you code. You know, and so there's people doing research, there's people sponsoring, there's people navigating the navigator to train them up in navigation. There's all kinds of stuff, different roles, you know, people thinking about automation and lean flow. And so you know, the first like five episodes of the Mob Mentality Show podcast, our podcast, is contain introductions to all of those roles. And there's a Git repo from Willem that has the introduction. So if you don't have anybody available to you to coach you through it, like Austin was mentioning, and those like and you have a lot of people that want to try it, I recommend playing this game on on a kata of some kind, just like a practice set of code, and just knocking that out. But you know, I think those roles are really great examples, and people start to get aha moments about like, oh yeah, I didn't realize that there's somebody called the nose, and that person is looking for refactorings. There are code smells that are available, and you know, this code is smelly. Like, and so maybe they're just only thinking about the smelliness of the code, and then it becomes more organic and natural. But what I've seen people do is when they play the game, their perspective sh shifts tremendously to from like, why would you have a bunch of people that's inefficient, to like, wow, there's a lot that somebody could just take and process by themselves and interject into the navigation of the code. So if you had a coalition of the willing and you didn't have a external coach, then I would highly recommend trying the RPG. You know, watch those episodes at first, and then jump in and play the game. And we have actually example episodes too, where we do a live playthrough of the game, so you can kind of watch us struggle through it with people that we hadn't programmed with before. Yeah.
Nice. And I can say, like, in for those members of our audience who are in safety critical industries like myself, you know, you have to do design reviews, you have to do code reviews. Quality is of utmost importance. And in this way of working, it all just happens automatically with no latency. And that's pretty attractive. So
Yeah, I mean that was the original idea behind extreme programming, wasn't it? If reviews are good, let's just do reviews all the time. Like, let's have everybody in the room look at this stuff and make sure we're not missing anything. So yes.
cool. Yeah, we do. I'd love to keep chatting, and maybe there'll be a part two, but we do have a hard stop in a few minutes. So we already, by your question, Chris and I have already plugged our show and some of the links from it. Jeff and Luca, do you guys have anything you want to share or plug before we close out?
I'll just say our podcast is the Agile Embedded Podcast. And if you go to agileembeddedpodcast.com or any major podcast service, you'll find it. My website is jeffgable.com. And again, if you're in medical devices and you need help with medical device software, that's my specialty. Luca, what about you?
Exactly. So, I'm a bit crazy. I have, in fact, three podcasts, the third of which is not officially out yet. So I'm not going to mention the name, but the second one is a DevOps podcast that is sort of half German, half English, and which interestingly touches on a lot of the same points that we've been talking about here. So it's interesting to sort of keep circling back to the same kinds of topics. And I found it amazing that that you, Chris and Austin, kept referring to lean, which people don't tend to talk about very much, but of course is sort of the granddaddy of all of this stuff that we're doing. And yes, of course, there's the Agile Embedded Podcast, of which I'm a co-host. And other than that, if you want to find out more about me, you can go to luca.engineer. Luca is Luca, and I trust you know how to spell engineer. And I promise that's a real website. There you can find links to, you know, to our shows, to many other things that are relevant to you. And if you are struggling with how to figure out how to apply agility properly to your work, be it embedded or otherwise, then give me a shout. I'd be happy to help.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, right on. Well, this has been really fun. It's been great doing this crossover episode with you all. And so, yeah, to our audience, either for the Agile Embedded podcast or for the Mom Mentality show, yeah, if you, we'd love to hear your feedback on this, your thoughts, your comments, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, and more, wherever you can find these two podcasts. We'd love to hear feedback. Also, if there's somebody out there who might need an intro to mob programming, kind of from maybe from a firmware audience perspective, or you know, addressing some very common pain points in the Agile embedded community, yeah, please share this episode with them. But otherwise, until next time, mob on, embed on, and have a good one. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks, everybody.